Welcome to Behind the Curtain, Nashville's mover, shaker,
and tastemaker.
Brought to you by Cord Real Estate, your key to the heart of Nashville. I'm Steve Luther alongside my co-host, Van Hoy.
Here we peel back the layers of Nashville's vibrant scene, sitting down with the innovators, creators, and leaders who shape our city. From music to business and everything in between, we dive into the journeys that have brought them to where they are today.
We're here to uncover the stories behind the success, the passion driving their pursuits, and why they've chosen Nashville as their stage. It's about the people who dream big, push boundaries, and make this city truly unique.
So join us as we explore the heart and soul of Nashville through the eyes of those who know it best.
Well, welcome to Behind the Curtain, Nashville's movers, shakers, and tastemakers. Today's guest is John Williams, a story of true resilience and dedication. From the streets of Nashville to founding a branded business, John's journey is nothing short of inspirational. As a serial entrepreneur, corporate video producer, director, photographer, and consultant, John's music-related training videos have been published internationally through Alfred Music Publishing. His commitment to his talents and his passion for helping others, especially the homeless and kids in foster care, highlight a character of profound depth and compassion. John's success story, underpinned by his humility and the reserved use of certain language for the divine, adds a rich layer to his fascinating narrative. So let's jump in.
Yeah.
John, pleasure having you here today.
It's my pleasure. When I first got the invite, I'm like, I don't know if I'm a mover and a shaker.
Well, maybe you're a tastemaker.
I am.
I like it. I was excited because before we went hot with the mics, we got to chat a little bit and found out we have all kinds of people in common. So that's good.
Well, which is not
bad. We might have even shared a few hallways.
I believe so.
Yeah. Van somehow seems to know everyone everywhere. It's just ridiculous.
But you never know.
Well, give us a brief overview of your personal and your business background. Let's kind of start in South Africa. You were born and raised there, spent 36 years there. Talk to us a little bit about that.
So you just got here, right?
Yeah,
36 years.
Yeah, exactly. I'm actually, you know, if you subtract my age minus the 36, that's actually really how old I am.
In
the US.
I like it. Yeah, yeah.
And my social security statement shows that there's like 18 years missing.
That's good.
Income there. So
what part of South Africa?
So I was born and raised in Pretoria, South Africa, lived a little bit in Joburg, or Johannesburg,
right.
And then Cape Town for a very brief stint. And then I came to the United States as a missionary on like a 40-day trip, and I was going to attend a music in the Rockies.
Right, of course.
Yeah, with Christian artists. And so people like, you're a missionary to the United States. And the day before I traveled to the U.S., I went to say goodbye to my parents. And they live on a hill, and there's this lady who had slipped and fallen, and there's these people standing around her, and she's saying, somebody please pray for me, somebody please pray for me. And they're just all standing around her, and it was right in their driveway.
Oh, wow.
And so I parked away from them, and I went there, and I immediately started praying for her. And then I said, do you guys want me to go call an ambulance? Yes. So I went and called and came back out. And a long story short is they were missionaries to South Africa from the U.S. And I said, well, that's funny, because I'm on my way to the United States. And they're like, why? And I said, as a missionary.
I love it.
And my confirmation was that here are four Americans, and they're saying, yeah, America needs missionaries.
Right.
And it was like the night before I traveled here. So I feel like it was just something that I could hold on to when it got rough and I was doubting myself and, you know, no backing from a mission organization or something.
Right.
Feeling led that I needed to be here. I thought I had a return ticket. So I thought I was going to go back to South Africa. And that's another long story. But so 2 days before I flew back, I found myself in New York. That's where my plane was going to be departing from. And I just realized that it wasn't time to go back.
Wow.
And so here I am in New York City with $600 cash, a sleeping bag, summer clothes, and my guitar.
Wow.
And
what year was this?
This was 96, the year of the blizzard of 96.
The blizzard. And the year of the Olympics. Yes. We had the Olympics down in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Yeah. And people were skiing right outside front door in Manhattan.
Wow.
So you get here to a blizzard, and there was a tornado or something as well, right?
Yeah. So I was there involved in music and music publishing and songwriting. And my friends said to me, you need to go to Nashville. You need to go to Nashville. I've never been to Nashville. And so I ended up packing up a U-Haul trailer, a cargo van, and on my way driving to Nashville, I couldn't see out the front. The wind and the rain was so bad, and there were tree branches and things hitting the truck. And from South Africa, there are no tornadoes.
Right, right.
So I just pulled over to the side of the road and went climbed in the back and slept. And the next day when I got to Nashville, I realized that I had driven right through the tornado.
Wow.
That was before Google. That was in the newspaper, sure. You know.
Yeah. That's incredible.
So what prompted the transition to Nashville? Was it you're looking to be in the music industry or?
Yeah, they said, you know, with your songwriting, you need to go write with other
people. He's carrying a guitar.
Oh. Yeah.
And a subway. They're like, oh, go to Nashville. Yeah.
Of course.
And they said, and when you get there, y'all. And I'm like, y'all? Like, now you'll find out.
You'll find out.
Now I use the term y'all.
Yeah. As long as they didn't tell you, bless your heart.
Yeah.
Yes.
I grew up in the deep south in Texas. And
oh, yeah.
I don't think I said y'all more than five times my entire life.
Yeah, but you're in Houston, Texas. You I don't know that that, you know, there's a different.
Well, Texas is really the only true South, man.
That's Southwestern.
People used to ask me, where's your accent from? And I said, the deep South. And
then, that's good.
I'm like the real deep South.
That's right.
South Africa.
That's right.
Now you arrived in Nashville and you went through some things.
Yes. So I arrived here and had no job. I mean, I just landed here.
Did you know anyone?
I knew one guy that I'd met at the music festival out in Colorado. Wow. And he said, if you come to Nashville, you know, you can come crash at my place. Well, I ended up staying there for 3 months and then renting with him for another like 2 years. But those first 3 months were rough. I had no work. I didn't know anybody. I had no car and lived out on Murfreesboro Road.
So
I walked everywhere.
I tell you what, Steve, I can't tell you how many people I've met at music festivals in other countries that I said, oh, yeah, come to America, you can stay with me. You know, I'm like, oh, sure. And every one of them takes you up on it. They do.
Well, I had to.
I love it.
You know, it was either that or sleeping under a bridge.
Right, right. Yeah. No, I love it. Some of our greatest friendships have come from that. So it's cool.
But now you ended up homeless at one point.
I ended up homeless, not the typical, you know, strung out on drugs or crazy. Well, that's debatable.
Depends
on who you ask. But what I made sure was that I didn't slip into the homeless mindset. So I dressed up every day. I found a place to go get a shower. I had the good fortune of knowing the next to the bank where my bank was. There was a public restroom but you had to have a code to get in. So I would go in after hours and use the sink there to shower and wash my hair, clean myself up. So and then dress up. And anytime I had no work and I needed to get out of I would just dress up and go walk around. I'd dress in my best clothes. Walk around Macy's and they call me sir and like, and I would go where all the expensive clothes are.
That's
and
right.
Be treated like a king, get a little boost and then leave.
That's good.
You gotta,
that's good.
It's some of the tricks you learn.
You manage your mindset.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
You said, at one point you'd been living in this, building for so long that You actually had a phone line installed.
301 Union Street, right?
That's impressive.
Indigo Hotel is the, yeah, now the American Trust building.
Right.
It was a boarded up building. It had electricity, but it had no air and it had no running water. And a friend of mine knew the owner, and so he had a key to the building, and I ended up living in that building for 9 months.
Wow.
And had a phone line installed. That's while I'm touring with like
incredible
flying private jets, right, Avalon,
Grammy-winning artists.
Yeah, Grammy-winning artists, and Sixpence None the Richer.
Right.
I'm flying in a G5 Learjet,
right,
and then coming home, having stayed in a five-star hotel.
Incredible.
And then going in. But I had a phone line. That's when you use the modem, you know.
Right.
Sure.
That weird modem sound.
Oh, yeah.
And I was building websites on the
incredible
on the side to get myself.
So if you're writing his bio, you'd say lived in the Hotel Indigo for 6 months. You know, like Coco Chanel lived in the Ritz.
So, yeah.
You
know. Now, there must have been a lot of life lessons kind of learned along the way going through that. What's some of the lessons you learned from having to go through that in your life?
I think one of the things is like, you have to be kind to yourself.
Mm.
You realize that your decisions matter, but they don't determine the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a lot of humility that you have to muster to actually have that mindset, because we think we decide and then it happens. Well, you can make all the right decisions and it still might not happen for you. So I did learn that. I became friends with the homeless people downtown, which is really great. I knew all the kingpins and
right
names and all that. And they're some of the kindest people. They were some of the kindest people. One day I was sitting outside the Indigo Hotel.
Yeah.
By John Williams.
That's right.
Collection.
I the love private it. Yes. That's right.
I was sitting outside the steps and I had a key to the door right behind me to get inside where my bed was.
Yeah, it's your building.
Yeah, that's why it was my bed. 67,000 square feet.
See?
While I was saying. Living in that building, we made an offer to buy the building.
I love it.
Seriously.
I love it.
So anyway,
yeah,
if I'd had the money,
yeah,
I would have banked.
It's incredible.
Anyway, so I was sitting there and the guy was walking past me and he came and sat next to me and he was obviously homeless. And, you know, he's talking about his homelessness and I said to him, well, he's like, hey man, I'm going to go. I need to go get something to eat. And I'm like, I haven't eaten today either. And he opened up his little gym bag that he was carrying all his stuff in. And he dug around there and he took an orange out and he gave me his orange. And he's like, here you go, man. And that's
good.
That's humbling. And those are the kind of things that I learned mm-hmm. on the street. Like there's people, some of them, and he told me his story. He just, you know, I don't know if his wife left him or it just happens. A lot of people, a tornado comes through and those people are homeless the next day. Now,
right.
If it's in mass, then there's the Red Cross gets involved and all, but it happens to individuals.
That's right.
Just so.
Were you able to communicate to any of the band members or anyone that you had a situation going on? Or was it something where you really had, you felt like you had to keep those two sides of your life separate?
People in the music industry, they can be either really sharp or like we discussed one of the other
sure.
artists, two of the lady female
right,
artists
right, right.
that we talked about. They're the sweetest souls and kind and
truly
and generous.
Kind.
But no, I kept my private life private.
I see.
And nobody knew.
Mm.
This would be a jaw drop moment
right.
if they
knew.
If yeah.
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 It's pretty incredible. You never know. Mm-hmm. You know, my wife and I are always saying people go through so much and you often have no idea. And I constantly telling our boys, kindness counts. Kindness counts. They joke that they're going to put it on my tombstone. Kindness counts. Because I say it all the time.
It kindness does count. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes. So I've got a story.
That's why we're here. We want to hear stories.
Yeah. So this morning, one of the car tires has got a slow leak. So I got to baby it every now and again. So today was the day.
Oh, yeah.
And I had my car door open on the other side. And so you have to engage the ignition, not start the motor, but engage it for the pump to work.
Oh, okay.
And so it's got this annoying ding, 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 ding. The door right. is open.
You know? Right.
And I'm on the other side, and I'm very audio sensitive. I'm a sound engineer as well. So I'm turning on the car pump. And it's got this annoying, you know, like a compressor sound.
Right.
It's just super loud. And I realized that I couldn't hear the annoying sound that was 6 feet away from me. And I just realized that sometimes the noise right around us is so loud that we can't hear what is 6 feet away from us.
That's good.
And if you're a person and your life is making a sound because you need something.
Right.
But the noise around me is so overwhelmingly loud that it masks and I don't see you and I don't hear you.
Right.
So I just learned a lesson there this morning.
It's so good.
That we need to make effort to recognize the noise in our life,
yes,
tone it down, and then actively pursue other noises.
Be aware,
so that we could be aware of other people's needs.
That's good.
I think there were three people that knew that I was living in that building.
Wow.
Van and I, when we met, you know, we're very involved with some nonprofits in Sumner County and
which is north of Nashville.
Yeah. And so one of Van's projects was basically to kind of relaunch the youth program of this leadership program that we were in. And
yeah, I'm like, why don't you have a youth version of this thing? They're like, well, there's nobody crazy enough to start it. I said, I host 10,000 teenagers in a field, play rock music. Oh, we'll put this. That's no problem.
So he ended up in New York doing a benefit show for a nonprofit up there. And he was.
That's a whole nother story.
One of the band's long story. But he ended up in an awkward situation with Colin Powell.
Oh, you know, don't ask, don't tell.
And you know, Colin Powell kind of challenged his thinking on poverty, that's all around us that we don't really pay attention to. And so, so Van came back and, you know, we started, realizing what kind of poverty was around us, that you don't really pay attention to as you're going through your life. You're so focused on what's in front of you. You don't see everything going on around you. And, you know, that made a big impact on.
He's alluding to a very deep, long,
it's a very,
very crazy story
that
we'll tell someday. But yes, it is true. You often have no concept of what's going on right in front of your eyes.
Yeah.
And we really do have to be listening.
Yeah.
And then once you listen, sometimes there's not a lot of noise involved and it's just an opportunity.
Yes.
And then, what comes to mind is that it was right after church Sunday, we're shopping for furniture. We bought a new house and we got a, you know, so you're in the mindset of like, go from one to the next, home store, furniture store to go. Get through your Sunday afternoon and see if you can, whatever it is you can gather and put in your fancy house. So I remember parking right like bumper to bumper with a little minivan. It was kind of dirty, and so didn't pay much attention past that. Went into the store, came back out, and there was a lady getting out of the minivan, and she came and she said, "Could you, the battery is flat. Could you give me a jump start?"
Sure.
So grabbed the stuff and was very proud that I, you know, because my wife was like, "Well, why do we have to have jumper cables?" I'm like,
"Right,
because somebody
you never know
need it."
That's all right.
So we jump start the car, and she's on her way, and I feel really good, you know, did my good deed for Sunday. And then I realized how much I failed.
Mm.
I didn't solve her problem. I just gave her a little jump start.
Mm.
There was a Barry store 1.5 blocks from there. And it would have cost me about $120 to have a new battery installed and maybe change this woman's life. All I did was just got her to the next spot. So she would have to go ask somebody else again. And so that was a landmark moment for me in my life. I was like, is this enough?
Right.
What you're doing? Because sometimes we do and we do good and check the box.
Sure.
But that one, I failed myself and I failed her too. And I wish I could do it differently.
Yeah. Well, you obviously, because you've been through so much, you have a deep sense of awareness. You're very mindful, as we would say in today's vernacular, right? What's the big transition moment where you go from living in the nondescript, you know, hotel to shopping for furniture on a Sunday afternoon, jumping people's cars? Like, what's the transition? Where's that moment that this was the big break, the big turn?
So homelessness was just a temporary thing.
Okay.
And I never felt homeless.
Right.
I was very poor at one point in time. I was like, I would go to the gas, like the convenience store at the gas station, and I'm like, I'll take a piece of chicken and a couple of wedges. Mm. And they would swipe my debit card and they're like, no, it's not enough money. And I'm like, okay, take the wedgie. You know,
right.
And eventually you leave there because there's only 59 cents in your bank account. So, and I kept those statements as a reminder.
Mm.
Like at one point in time, my business balance maybe 10, 15 years ago was $1.18.
Incredible.
And I mean, what,
especially given your level of success today. So,
yeah. So, and I don't know if I'm that successful. I'm successful, in the fact that I survived.
Right.
And that it didn't, leave a scar. It left, an impression, which is different.
So would you say it's your mindset that helped you step forward from the homeless situation?
Well, I don't like to call myself a Christian because scripture says we will be called Christians by our love. So, but I believe that some of the closest moments that I've had with God was when I was alone in the hotel.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Scripture says he's close to the brokenhearted.
That's right.
And I wasn't really heartbroken.
Mm.
What was heartbreaking for me is that I was away from my daughters in South Africa for 5 years without seeing them.
Wow.
No homelessness can compare it with that.
But you felt called that you were supposed to be here.
Yes. So one of the things, so it's mindset. And it's because I had a vision of why I had to be here.
Mm.
I kept saying to God, I kept saying, why can't I be with my children? And he said, you're the head, they should be with you.
Oh.
And like, how do you respond to that? You just shut up.
Wow.
And he said, I'll take care of them. You just need to take, he said, kept saying to him in my mind and in my heart, he said, it was like, and it sounds for the people who don't know, don't have a personal relationship with God, I'm not a preacher, but he gives you impressions and he speaks to you. And he used to say to me, I can be a much better father to them than what you can be right now. Because you're broken and you need to heal. So he put me through a whole range of things. And I still carry brokenness. I think everybody carries some kind of brokenness. And but so how did I get from there? I was never there. It was just my where I slept.
Okay.
It was not where I lived.
You didn't brand yourself that way.
I didn't know. But that was the mindset.
Right.
That was like, I cannot. And anytime I had like a little bit of money, because a lot of the money that I earned traveling with these bands and sleeping in these five-star hotels and I sent back to my children.
Of course.
But every now and again, I would have some money. And I would go check myself into like a cheap, very cheap hotel.
Right.
Where I could sleep and watch TV and have a shower and have a bath and have another shower just like go sleep some more. In the trunk of my car, I had a car, which is great.
Right.
Which got repossessed one day.
Mm.
Yeah. It's horrible when you walk outside, you're on your way to an appointment.
Sure.
I just knew because I was 3 months behind and I just didn't have the money. And the bank didn't want to, they wouldn't accept one payment at a time. They said, no, you cannot make any payments. You may have to pay everything.
Mm.
So I ended up working for another nine months. Yeah. And somebody gave me a car and then I bought another car, gave the car away. So I got a car and I gave one away. It was pretty
incredible.
Cool.
So was there a venture or a deal or a tour or something that was the big moment?
Yes. So with traveling with bands, I ended up having the privilege to work with a producer, John Ryan, in LA.
Mm.
And one of his bands, he just got signed to Madonna's Maverick label.
Right.
And he flew me out to LA and put me up there. And I was tour manager and front of house sound engineer for the band. And they were in rehearsals and we were just about to go on tour. And then Maverick decided to drop the band.
Got it.
So the band was still committed to do the tour.
Sure.
So I came back to Nashville. And from my hotel, man, I should have gotten myself like some robe or something.
I know. I wish I'd known you. Maybe we did know each other. And I didn't realize it.
But so I told them, listen, pay me $500 and I will manage the tour from a distance. I will continue advancing all the shows for you.
Yeah, yeah.
And I actually created a website where daily they would log in and everything would be there.
So what year was this?
1999.
Okay.
Okay, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
And then this guy that worked for Def Jam Records, David Leitch.
Okay.
I had the privilege of going to his house. He had over 2,000 platinum albums.
Incredible.
Everywhere. And so he heard from John Ryan that I had done this good deed for the Will Seabrook band. And he just called me one day and said, hey, I think I have a job for you. Are you available? And I said, yes. He's like, why don't you, he said, can you come for an interview tomorrow? I'm like, I'm in Nashville. I know he's in New York. And he's like, I'm in St. Petersburg. And, if you check your email, there's a plane ticket waiting for you.
Wonderful.
And so I went for a job interview with a billionaire.
Incredible.
Bill Edwards. He runs a bunch of entertainment companies, and this was Big Three Records.
Right.
And so I get there and this, I didn't know who this guy was.
There weren't a lot of billionaires in 99.
No.
Not like there are today. No. There's no crypto back then. Yeah,
exactly. So here's Bill Edwards, the billionaire. And here's David Leitch, who I'd met once or twice before. That's the guy who called me. Right. And then there's this other guy. His name is Quadri.
Hmm. So
if those who are in the music business might remember him. But so afterwards, I went to his office, and behind his desk, behind Quadri's desk, is a 50 million.
Incredible.
50 million albums.
Yeah.
Boys to Men. He was their manager.
Incredible.
So here I'm sitting in this meeting with all these guys, and they just let me sit there. And so they're talking about who they're going to hire, who they're going to hire. We're going to drop $250,000 on promotions for this band and this. And you know, so I'm just sitting there. And so eventually the billionaire looks over. He says, come sit here. He says, I hear you want to work with me. I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, please.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. And so I made it for resume or something, and I came up with a slogan that said, big dreams, managing big dreams is no small task.
Mm.
And he looked at it and he's like, oh, may I have to borrow that? Because his company is called Big.
Very good. Yeah.
So he's like, well, and he just asked me like two or three questions, and he's like, well, why don't you go with him and get your paperwork started? So that was my interview, like
asking
a couple of questions and listening to them banter. And so they took me to admin, you know, and I had to sign documents,
of course,
that much. And so they're like, hey, this is 1999. They're like, is $1,500 okay to start with? And I'm thinking $1,500 a month is, for somebody who's living
right
on the street, that's a lot of money.
Right, right.
And I'm like, and they said, because I hesitated, they said, per week. And I'm like, yes, yeah, that's okay.
I love it.
And so then they said, I said, when they say, are you okay if we start you today?
Hmm.
Well, sure. So I got paid from the day I got the interview.
Right.
And then they flew me back to Nashville, and I'm like, when am I working? I'm like, well, we're not ready. The band's not ready for you yet. So I spent 10 days on payroll getting paid $1,500.
Right, right.
And then they sent me a plane ticket. That's how I knew I started working. I just got an email with a plane ticket saying you're going to LA.
Yeah.
And so.
Love
that's,
it.
That's how I.
And what was your role for the band at that point?
I was the tour manager.
Okay.
So.
Mm-hmm. Gotta love that.
I mean, yeah, that's definitely a story of resilience. You stuck it out until.
That's right.
The opportunity came.
And you didn't give up.
Yeah.
And I, you know, obviously spirituality was, you know, a big part of your story too. I kind of alluded this in the intro, but you do something that I thought was so interesting. You have like reserved language for your spirituality, for God. Talk a little bit about that and kind of where that started.
We're going deep.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going deep today. We're not just talking music business. We're not just talking, you know, touring and all the stories behind the scenes. We're going deep.
Well, you know, if you're in a courtroom, you call the judge, Your Honor. You can't call him sir.
Right. Especially if it's not a sir.
If you're, you know, in the presence of, you know, the King of England.
That's right.
It's Your Highness and all. So that everybody in that is in a hierarchy, that they have a title, and you have to address them in a certain way. Well. In the culture that we live, you know, God is like, you know, he's like the hamburger. God's awesome. Mm. This hamburger is awesome. And oh, man, this beer is awesome.
Right.
You know, and so everything is awesome. And I just realized one day that I didn't have anything that I had reserved vocabulary wise to address God, you know.
Mm.
You know, it's just God, please help me, you know, please help me. You know,
that's
kind of like how a lot of our lives are. And so I just decided I'm going to reserve the word awesome. So God, and I tell him, Lord, you're my only awesome. God, you're my only awesome. And so when somebody says
kind of a Rich Mullins kind of reference here,
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Awesome God.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, yeah. Richard Mullins.
It's good.
That song was definitely one of the theme songs of my life.
I love it.
Yeah. And
you reserved the word awesome.
Yeah. So this is not awesome. This is great.
Steve, you are not awesome.
No.
You're amazing, okay, but that. You're not awesome.
I'm okay with that.
You're incredible, man. Yeah. So it does something for me.
Right.
And I
love it.
I find myself, if we're sitting down to eat, and you're like, man, this guacamole is awesome. Under my breath, I'll say, God, you're my only awesome.
Cool.
I'll just remind myself.
Yeah.
It's something small, but it's big for me.
Yes.
Because there's another scripture that says, give honor where honor is due.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, God's not my buddy. Jesus is my friend. But God's my father, and then all three of them, they're God, and to be revered.
Mm.
And it says the demons know God, and they tremble.
Right.
And I think they can see him better than what we can.
For sure.
So, yeah. So God's awesome.
I love it.
The fact that I'm sitting here is great.
Right.
But God's awesome.
I love it.
It's good.
So you were tour manager. How did you get into video production? What was the transition there?
So I married a sweet lady, and she had 2.5 teenagers. One was 9, and then the other two were teens, 13 and 16. And I was gone every weekend, and I just realized I can't be a dad from a distance.
Right.
So I made a very it was really tough. That was one of the toughest decisions I made, is to give up my audio music career and become a dad. And then I just kept getting calls for music and tour management and sound engineering, but I wasn't that anymore. I couldn't
do that. Wasn't
yes. So I decided to start a eBay business first.
Ah.
Yeah. And grew that in about 2 or 3 years to $500,000 business way back in the day.
Incredible.
We had personal phone numbers
to
the eBay guys. We had personal phone numbers to American Express. My American Express card, I'm talking 2000, 2001, 2002, somewhere around there, was like $50,000-$60,000 a month, and we paid off every month.
Sure.
And so we had personal phone numbers to all of these things and that. And at one point in time, I had like 16 video cameras. I'm like, I've got a lot of video cameras. what is that?
Right.
So anyway, so we put on a live event, a pay-to-play event.
Yeah.
And had 14 bands in one day on stage.
It's great.
And everybody walked away with a live switched, and the guy, Russ Long.
Yeah.
Great friend of mine.
Yeah.
He mixed the Sixpence None the Richer album.
Sure.
He was in the truck outside mixing. So we had, I had Leanne Rimes's front of house engineer, Steve, he was mixing the bands live. And then Russ Long was in the truck outside mixing to tape.
So incredible.
So they had a full-on live event video. You play and you leave with your tape.
Yeah.
And a CD the next day.
That was a big deal back in the day.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. So that, and then it was called Live Video Showcase.
Cool.
And then from there, started doing the video, thinking that I was going to be doing music videos.
Right.
And corporate's what pays the bills.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we had all kinds of music video channels, even here in Nashville back in the day.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you have obviously worked with a lot of pretty insane people over the years and done a lot of projects. Are there any projects in particular that kind of stand out in your mind? Like, man, I'm really, really proud of what I did with that.
Don't be humble. This isn't the time for that. This is the time to, like, you know, toot your horn a little.
It was great. We got offered very early on in my business, HD Perfect, the video business, got an opportunity to create these training videos for Alfred Music. And was able to get free reins to produce. So we produced, I think, 8 training DVDs for them. Some 5 of them were software related, like Logic, Sonar, GarageBand, like from the beginning. Like, even now, 20 years later, it's 20 years later, if you pop the DVD in,
right,
if you can find a DVD player,
right,
then you will be able to set up a basic home studio for GarageBand.
Got it.
Even though GarageBand is probably so many versions later,
of course,
the basics are still in there. And we also did a Modern Live Sound, which takes you from the very, very basics all the way through to live festivals.
Right.
And then Modern Live Sound for churches. So at one point in time, I got a glitch in delivering some of these videos. And I figured I don't know if Alfred actually believes me that there was something with software. I was telling Apple techs on the phone what their stuff could and couldn't do. That's how
right.
deeply involved I was with this, trying to fix the problem. So I packed up my large iMac and flew out to Alfred in Van Nuys, California. And when I walked through the door, there was this little sign and it says, "Welcome, John Williams." And it was like,
that had to feel good.
Yeah, that was like, really? So that was because I was always the guy shepherding people where, you know,
sure,
Welcome so-and-so, the big act, the main act, you know,
right,
the headliners, you know, I was the one behind them. And so just that was, it was kind of cool.
That's good.
Well, you've been through a lot. What's some advice you can give for young people, you know, just kind of getting started in music and in video, whatever, that are kind of new to Nashville? Like, what's the advice you give them to make it happen?
Slow down and pay your dues.
Mm.
Really. They want everything instant. They come fresh out of college. They know everything.
No, of course.
No, you don't. And they want to charge commercial rates.
Right.
So I can't hire them. Yeah, I can't trust. I tell my clients, an intern will never show up on your gig.
Mm.
I bring trained, seasoned professionals that I've worked with sometimes for a decade or more.
Right.
Those are the people that I bring to your project. And then, so for the folks who just graduate out of college, or who's still in college, or just playing around or wanting to start your own business, come learn from somebody who's been there and done that. And I haven't been there and done that, because the guys who started in 69, who went through film school and loaded 16 millimeter film,
right,
and, you know, all that, I'm jealous about their experience, who had to, you know, had to have huge lights that weighed like, you know, a third of a ton. Now you pack lights. I fly and do interviews and stuff like that, and my lights are like this tiny. Goes incredible. In my carry-on bag. So yeah, just don't price yourself out of the market. Don't send a Word document as an attachment.
Mm.
Send a PDF. It's like little things like that. But because Word documents, that's what the phishing scammers do. They embed stuff in there. So anything with a Word document, any professional knows what they're doing, and I'm going to open it.
Right.
Especially if they don't know you.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, but half of what he sends me.
Yeah, that's a fact. That's a fact.
don't open a Word document.
And I'm not kidding either.
I don't know. Do you think that will help somebody?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and contact me.
Yeah. You So obviously you went through being homeless. You're successful now. And you're giving back.
Sounds like he was successful then too.
Well, that's fair.
I think that's kind of the point.
But you're to the stage now where you're able to give back and make an impact. You work a lot with homelessness and also foster kids. Talk to us a little bit about that. What do you do with those, and why do those mean so much to you?
It's a passion of mine that came out of nowhere. I was still in my homeless years. I would spend a lot of time at Starbucks. Hmm. Reading the newspaper on a Sunday after church. And I go skip past the obituaries and stuff like that. And then towards the end, there were these pages and pages and pages of people advertising to adopt children.
Hmm.
And I was like fascinated by it. It was like, I'm a doctor. My wife's a nurse. I'm a attorney. My wife's a CPA, or the other way around.
Like in the Tennessean.
Yes.
So really?
Yes. So this is before Dr. Google.
Yeah.
So I would just, I would read these things. Cause
wow.
At the time, okay. And I'm,
right.
And, you can only read so much of your Bible. I'm not that sure. Holy.
Right, right.
There's also a scripture that says, if you find honey, don't eat too much because you will vomit.
So
I would read the newspaper and I saw all these. So I'm thinking it's like homes for sale.
Right.
They start with the lowest price and then you end with the highest price.
Okay, that's right.
So I'm thinking, okay, starting with the babies. Starting with the babies,
sure.
then as you progress, you're going to get now, this is 3-year-olds, and we want to adopt a 5-year-old or a teenager or something. They were all babies.
Wow.
And I've been given the gift of empathy. And I just imagined I'm a 13-year-old kid in a foster care situation,
right?
And I get my hands on the newspaper, and I've got time on my hands, and I'm going through this, and I'm like, oh, there's people wanting to adopt people. And I'm reading through this thinking, okay, start low, end sure. high. So I'm gonna there's gonna be somebody there looking for somebody like me, only to realize that there wasn't anything for you.
You put yourself in their shoes.
Yes. And that's where the burden came from, and where the vision started developing. And it took me about 18 years to I found out that when kids in foster care age out, when they turn 18, the state releases them. So there's 10,000 teenagers that age out of the foster care system in the United States every year. And happy birthday, this is your 18th birthday.
Right.
Here's the street.
Right.
How's that for a birthday gift? And not all of them become homeless, because there are people that have a support network.
Sure.
But they go live with a grandma or something, get a job. But if you read the statistics of how many of them, get incarcerated, become prostitutes, drug addicts, suicides, it's horrendous.
Mm.
And it's just a revolving door. It just every year that statistic doesn't really change. And so 3 years ago, I started, I incorporated a nonprofit called Stop Aging Out. And the mission is to eradicate homelessness amongst American teens aging out of the foster care system.
Mm.
And there's just a one-page website up there. There's no fundraising. There's nothing, because I don't want to ask. I've never asked for money.
Right.
I would go hungry before I would ask for money. So I don't want to. So I'm working on setting it up where businesses would be adopting a child that will be aging out.
Cool.
and that they would give them a job, training, a vehicle, place to live, a community, and that they would. And so that's my vision right now. I'm working on that. Fortunately, the church that I am a stakeholder in, they have pushed the Stop Aging Out thing, which was used to be at the bottom of the aging out ministry. They pushed it up to number one. So I'm like,
oh, wow.
I feel like I'm in the right place.
I love it. Have you been able to use your video production to start sharing the stories?
So I started in 1999 when this vision came. I started working on a TV show called Nashville Briefcase. And it was going to be just about the goings on in Nashville. And that was before Nashville was the it city.
Right.
I saw, it's one of my gifts again, I saw the future of where it was going to go. I have picture drawings of drawing the skyline that you're looking at right now.
Incredible.
From 1999. Because I just saw
right.
it. And it was a half hour show. The whole idea was to have a teenager with an adult host hosting along, and you know, just having some fun moments, like if we're featuring like a ice cream store on Broadway or something, you know, having the kid, you know, just being kid with ice cream and featuring the businesses, and that's how that would pay for the actual for the show, and then at the end it would be introduced like, hey, Johnny over here is in foster care. He's a normal kid, like you've noticed throughout the show. And he is in need of an adoptive family.
Wow. So the kid that's in the video with the ice cream is the kid who needs to be.
Yes.
Wow.
And I was.
That's intense.
If you look at my if you look at my notes, I was trying to figure out how could I have.
Yeah.
Live interaction in 1999. How could I have live interaction with people like you have now with American Idol and all that, where people vote and all that kind of stuff? I was trying to do that where people could call in live. And anyway, so the church that I'm part of, they have a video team. I offered to help, and they've not called on me to help them yet. Ah. But we've gotten over 400 children adopted through.
Well, why didn't you lead with that line? I'm over here like, oh, some idea. He's got some idea, you know, something someday he wants to do. He's already got 400 kids placed. That's incredible.
Well, so that's the church did that.
Yeah. You got to lead with the lead, you know, like you put it way below the fold.
That was none of my doing. Maybe my was praying and aching for those kids.
Yeah. Well, you helped them bring it to the forefront.
I don't know if I did that.
Well, you brought me a very humble person here.
I know.
Deep stuff. I love it.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is I didn't shoot the videos, but the concept that they have right now is with they
right in line.
They create a 3-minute highlight video of these kids.
Yes.
And you can go on the website and you can see who's
incredible.
To be, you know, who's up for adoption, and you can actually experience the kid, and they ask them questions and stuff like that.
Wow.
So that concept is new to a lot of people, but it was something that I've had in mind in 1999. And we actually shot some episodes, and it never made it out there.
Sure.
Because I was poor and homeless.
What do you want your legacy to be, John?
Or what would you say will be your legacy since you're so humble?
You know,
I don't know that he'll say what he wants.
You remind me of just a while ago when they gave me the type and the most humble person, and when I put it on, they took it away again.
See, well, you know, when you put it on, we take it off. What's the test? Is he gonna put it on or not?
No, I didn't, but it was a good joke person.
I like it.
What I want to leave behind, firstly, I want my children and my grandchildren to know what their what their origin is, like how deep my roots went, so that when they find themselves in a place where they need to hold on. And I have three beautiful daughters and, you know, a bunch of grandkids. So
do they know your story?
I think they will learn some. But yeah, they don't know half, but not even.
Because you talked about the years that you were away.
Yes.
Do they now know what you were away overcoming, or what God did in your life in that time?
It's a long weekend getaway that needs to happen with all of them. So I only need to tell.
How wonderful!
Once. Yeah. Yes.
Meditate on that one. That's it. Well, can we bring the cameras for that?
Well, John, it was
incredible.
It was a pleasure having you here today. If someone wants to get a hold of you either about film production or about how they can get involved with some of the nonprofit stuff you're doing, what's the best way for someone to reach you?
If you Google one word, HD Perfect, I'm the full first page.
All right. Love it. Just Google me. I love it.
Yeah. And tell him to send the John Williams checks to my box, please.
He said checks, not chicks.
Checks. Yes.
Yes.
John, it was a pleasure.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure, guys. Thank you.
What a
Thank
pleasure.
You. Thank you. Thank you for All right. watching.
We'll see you guys next time.
Yeah.
Well, that's a wrap on today's episode of Behind the Curtain, Nashville's Movers, Shakers,
and Tastemakers.
We hope you've been inspired by the stories of passion, perseverance, and innovation right here in Nashville.
A big thank you to our guests for sharing their journeys, and to you, our listeners, for joining us. And of course, our gratitude to Accord Real Estate for making this conversation possible.
Don't forget to follow or subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform.
Thank us.
Yes, you did.
Oh, I guess I did. Well, thank us. Okay.
Like I was saying.
Oh, yeah.
Don't forget to follow or subscribe on your favorite platform to catch every episode and hit that notification bell. We've got plenty more fascinating guests lined up, ready to share their insights and inspirations.
And we love hearing from you. So reach out to us with your thoughts, questions, or suggestions for who you'd like to hear from next.
Until next time, keep chasing your dreams and making your mark in Nashville.
Oh, my goodness. Remember, am I talking to Casey
it's
Kasem?
It's the people behind the scenes that make the city shine.
I love it. Take care. See you behind the curtain.